This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Albert Mueller Program all over this nation. There are public protests going on right this minute concerning immigration. It has become all of a sudden the raging debate in America, probably the first time since the early 20th century that the issue has achieved this kind of cultural and political prominence. A lot of evangelical Christians, a lot of thinking Christians are beginning to ask the question, how should we think about this? What is the Christian position on immigration? How do we weigh different issues of justice and law honoring and how do we think about citizenship and nationhood and all the rest? We're going to be talking about it today. And I'm going to tell you right up front, I don't think we're going to eventually just settle the issue today. I don't think we're going to end the program today saying, well, now we have the complete position. I do think we can start to line out some principles that ought to order our thinking as Christians try to think through these issues. Get ready to call. The number's 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. One of the things I have noted on this issue as I've been across this country several times already this year is that one's position on immigration often has much to do with where one lives in this country. If you're calling from California, you may have one position, or in South Florida, or along the New Mexico, Texas, Arizona border. If you're living in Ohio or Illinois, you may have a very different understanding. If you're living in Minnesota, you're not concerned with millions of Canadians coming from the north. This is a very regional picture, but it is a national problem, and of course it is a national law, or set of laws concerning our immigration policy, and thus we need a national discussion. Intelligent Christians discussing immigration policy today on the Albert Mueller Program. Again, the number 877-893-8255. First, to review some issues in the news. The aging playboy, Hugh Hefner, turned 80 yesterday. We did the program on this on Friday. I posted a major commentary on the issue today, also a blog entry. Gary Gentile of the Associated Press covered the milestone in Hefner's life. His article ran in several newspapers. Also, I picked it up at ABC News. In his article, Mr. Gentile points to Hefner's argument that his playboy philosophy is, quote, as relevant as ever. And, an interesting point. Mr. Hefner has made his career by trying to paint America as sexually repressed. And thus, he tries to portray himself as the liberator of America from its sexual repression. Now, let me ask you an honest question. I mean this in all honesty. Can any sane person looking at America in the year 2006 describe this country as sexually repressed? Or let me ask this question another way. Where do you have to be in terms of your own worldview in order to see America in 2006 as sexually repressed? I guess that's the more interesting question. I guess you've got to be so far out there on the agenda of the sexual revolution that if anyone says no to anything or anyone at any time, one is, of course, excused merely as being sexually repressed. Now, when he speaks about Playboy and his philosophy being relevant, he says this, and I'm quoting from Gary Gentile's story, that is Hefner's point, that Playboy with his mission of sexual liberation is as relevant as ever in these days of federal government crackdowns on television content that some consider indecent. By the way, speaking of his own life, Mr. Hefner said, certainly it is a life well lived, and I wouldn't trade places with anybody. My life has been so rewarding and so satisfying, I would be hesitant to change anything. Well, there he is, a Playboy to the bitter end. I do think that birthday is a hallmark in America's cultural transformation. Just to remember what happened over the last, say, half century with the influence of Playboy magazine and the mainstreaming of pornography. Look at all the lives that have been warped. Look at all the false expectations about sex that have been raised. And look at how many women have been turned into nothing more than objects of lust and leering for men. Well, the Gospel of Judas is also still a media item. We talked about this last week as well. Of course, we had the Gospel of Judas released by the National Geographic Society in a press conference just at the end of the week. And also last night, a two-hour special on the National Geographic Channel. And all kinds of audacious, ridiculous claims are being made. As a matter of fact, at an article that I published this morning, I said that the media reporting, or reportage, as they say in the business, about the Gospel of Judas has ranged from the responsible to the ridiculous, with, in terms of numbers, the ridiculous winning over the responsible conclusively. It's a landslide. You know, last night I was listening just to some of the media as I was at work in my study, and what did I hear? I heard claims that this is going to lead to a reconsideration of the gospel. It's going to lead to a complete re-understanding, a reconsideration and reformulation of the events leading up to the passion and death and resurrection of Jesus Christ and more and more. It's nothing of the sort. It is a document that the early church, by the year 180, recognized as heretical. And they were right. And that's the whole point. Christians need not be shaken by this. Should we be interested in it? Of course. As a theologian, I am very interested in it. I read this gospel now from cover to cover, at least the portions that are available in translation. I read the entire book about how the document was found and then translated, and National Geographic put it forth and all the rest. Why do I find it interesting? Because as a theologian, I'm very interested to understand how the early church came to understand the difference between orthodoxy and heresy, the truth and the lie. And I have to tell you, I am very, very thankful that the early Christians came to understand the gospel in terms of its biblical purity and to be able to recognize false gospels for what they are. I mean, we should be thankful for this. This is just another reminder of what could have happened. If the church had been deluded, if the church had been confused, if the church had been misled, we could have found the gospel of Judas in the New Testament rather than Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John. The reason that the gospel of Judas is not there is because the early church was conclusively, overwhelmingly, virtually unanimously, certain that it did not belong, that it wasn't right, it wasn't apostolic, and it wasn't authoritative, and it wasn't inspired, and it did not bear accurate testimony to Jesus Christ. You know, let's think about it this way. If any considerable number of persons at any time in the history of the church had believed these things and had seen the gospel of Judas as their gospel, we would have known about it long before National Geographic could have done a two-hour special in the year 2006. It was found in the abandoned, dusty sands of a desert cave in Egypt, where it had languished for about 17 centuries because the early church understood it to be heretical. And we need to learn that lesson all over again. I wonder if we would have the same fortitude today. That's another interesting question. With all these false gospels and everything out there, I wonder if we in the church today have enough theological courage and clarity and understanding to identify the same false gospels. Adam Gropnik, writing at the New Yorker about the discovery, said this, and he took some real shots at us. He's not one of us in terms of a confessing Christian, but this is what he says. He says, obviously the Gospel of Judas appears at a time of new fashion, not to say rage, for alternate Gospels and revisionist retellings of the Jesus story. These are not the egalitarian feminist visions of the story that were among the first fruits of the Nag Hammadi discovery. Instead, the new obsession is to introduce or reintroduce into Christianity something hidden, strange, and cultic, to reveal a deliberately suppressed story. And yet an odd double rhythm is at work. By making the gospel story more occult, one also drains it of its cosmic significance. Making it more mysterious makes it less mystical. The gospel of Judas turns Christianity into a mystery cult. Jesus at one point describes to Judas the highly bureaucratic organization of the immortal realm, enumerating hundreds of luminaries, but robs it of its ethical content. Jesus' message in the new gospel is entirely supernatural. You don't have to love thy neighbor, just seek your star. Very interesting. And exactly right. It is about seeking the star. That's what many Americans want. They want a religion that tells them, go find your bliss. Go follow your star. Go, develop your own religion and call it by whatever you want to call it. And this is supposedly given permission for that. Because to hear some of these put forth scholars speak, you would think that what this means is that early Christianity didn't know what Christianity was. Of course, it proves the opposite. Early Christians did understand what Christianity was. That's why they rejected the Gospel of Judas. If they had not understood it,
2 minutes,
they would have allowed it to continue uncontested. Here's an interesting question in our very interesting day. Would scientists lie? I posted an article about this last week because, you know, so much of what we talk about in our cultural conversation in America gets traced back to someone in a lab coat somewhere who wrote a paper. And it got published, and someone picked it up in the news. Lots of it is nonsense. Some of it is sense. I mean, after all, science has transformed the way we live. I'm thankful for electric lights and automobiles and planes and navigation systems and electrocardiograms and defibrillators and all the rest. But an awful lot of what is put forth as science really isn't. The Chronicle of Higher Education, and that's kind of the Wall Street Journal of the business of academia, reported last week that a large percentage of research scientists admit to fabricating or manipulating data because of a sense of, quote, being wronged. Reporter Lila Gutterman explains that the Journal of Empirical Research on Human Research Ethics will report this week that perceived injustice and scientific misbehavior are linked. Now, in the article, they make a very interesting revelation, and that is that as many as a third of scientists have admitted to at least at some point in their careers fabricating data. Now, the next time you hear some scientific report come down that says X, Y, or Z, and the next time you hear the media trumpeting this as the latest discovery of exactly how the world is and how the world works and what human life is and where it begins or where it ends, just remember that scientists are human beings too. And that means that they are just as driven by their passions. They are just as affected by sin. They are just as limited in even their own self-understanding of their own motivations as the rest of us. The scientific method puts in a lot of protections, but it can't protect a human being from being human. We're going to talk about immigration policy. Where should we stand? Coast to coast, this is the Albert Mueller Program.
This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program.
Well, folks, right now I'm looking at a picture on C-SPAN of a massive demonstration at the mall there in Washington, D.C. News reports coming out of 500,000 and more gathered in Dallas, Texas. Also massive protests in Los Angeles, other portions of the world. Even places like Fort Myers, Florida, according to Associated Press. It's very interesting to think about how in places large and small, east and west, north and south, all of a sudden the immigration issue has become front burner. Now, I have received so many questions about this. How should we as Christians think about the issue of immigration? I don't think there is an easy answer to this. And right now, let's just talk about how we arrived at this moment of political impasse in this country. How have we arrived at such a moment of impasse? Well, for one thing, we have an immigration system that is broken. Now, I don't think you have to be left or right, Democrat, Republican, or even angry or not to understand that it's broken. It's broken for several reasons. Number one, it really fits more of a Cold War phenomenon. It fits more of a mold of what the world was like when we were battling the Soviet Union and when the adversary was the Soviet Union, the Eastern Bloc, and we were worried about how to manage immigration issues with the picture being world competition between two superpowers. The other problem is that we have institutionalized hypocrisy in our immigration code. And how have we done that? Well, we say you can't enter and you can't work if you're undocumented, and then we create an economics context in which we depend upon them working. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, there are strange bedfellows on the immigration issue because the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is very concerned about sending massive numbers of illegal or now they're called undocumented workers back because they depend upon them for harvesting a lot of the crops in California and other countries. We're doing all kinds of work, and we're not talking about small numbers. We're talking about an estimate of about 11 million undocumented workers in America right now, about 11 million. And interesting other aspects of this, I mean, another reason why this is a crisis is because local and state governments are being called to offer services to persons as if they were citizens. There are all kinds of calls for them to be naturalized and given the right to vote and the right to become citizens. And there are also people on the other side who look and who say you can't have a nation without controlling borders. You can't possibly maintain an open immigration just to whoever come policy. You know, it's fine for the Statue of Liberty to have that statement from Emma Lazarus, but it's actually impossible for the United States to take all the world's poor and all the world's outcasts and all the world's persecuted. There are 6 billion people in the world, and this country can't take 6 billion people. There are also issues about crime. There are reports from very credible sources that about 1 out of 10 of these undocumented workers have been involved in some sort of crime, some violent crime. Some when they were wherever they were before they came here, and some after they arrived. How do you factor all this together? And on the Christian side, we're trying to think about this as Christians. How do we come up with a policy that, for one thing, suggests that we ought to honor the law? I mean, after all, the Bible is very clear that we are not to honor law breaking. And where the law says this is how one becomes a citizen and you cannot enter without this kind of permission and you must have a green card and you must do X and Y and Z, we know that we are to honor the law. We're to honor the law in terms of our own behavior, and we are also to honor the law in terms of encouraging others, creating a culture and a personal web of relationships in which we encourage others also to obey the law. And then on the other hand, we have what many people are setting forth as the issue of justice. We must respond to this crisis in a way that is just. And yet, how do you define justice in the midst of this? Well, I can tell you, you know, from the very beginning here, that I'm convinced that we are not going to send back 11 million undocumented workers. I just don't think that's going to happen. I don't think there is the political will in this country. I don't think either political party will take that on. I think there's a lot of dishonesty in the way both political parties try to deal with this issue. One of the unspoken things is that both parties recognize that the burgeoning number of Hispanic immigrants in this country represents a massive voting bloc. Some political strategists believe that it may be big enough to swing even a presidential election one way or the other. Both parties want to be seen as the party that is friendly to Hispanics. Neither party wants to send back 11 million undocumented workers. But if you're not going to send these workers back, what do you do with them? There are some who say, look, this offer of an earned amnesty, which is a very interesting concept, kind of an oxymoron on itself, an earned amnesty. But the suggestion is that President Bush's proposed earned amnesty basically rewards lawbreaking. And there are people in other countries who would desperately want to come here, and they can't come here if they obey the law. Meanwhile, people are coming illegally and thus gaining by their illegal act the privilege that many persons have been denied who've tried to work through legal channels. You know, what is justice in the midst of this? What would the Bible require of us? Well, the scripture is very clear that we must offer help to those who need assistance, a cup of water to the thirsty, food to the hungry. In the book of Deuteronomy and throughout the Old Testament, there is the exhortation that Israel was to take careful care of orphans and widows and the alien in their midst. But we're now living in a different geopolitical context, aren't we? The rise of the nation state. I mean, people in the ancient world didn't carry passports. Their nationality was basically ethnic. We do not base our nationality now on ethnic and racial identity. Instead, we have the modern construct of citizenship, which requires the prior construct of the nation state, which emerged, by the way, in early modern Europe. Thus, with the rise of the nation state and with the idea of citizenship, the question is, what defines that citizenship? Is it genetic? Is it ethnic? Well, no, we don't believe that. Is it cultural? Well, at least in part. Is it birth? Well, that is the biggest and most common determining issue in the United States. If you're born here, you're considered an American citizen. But that creates some awkward situations, too, doesn't it? I mean, after all, you've got babies being born to undocumented workers. Are we in the situation where the babies, the children, are considered to be American citizens, able to grow up and vote while their parents are undocumented and unrecognized and assumed to have no rights of citizenship, even as they raise these children who are American citizens? I'd love to know what you think about this. We're going to be looking at some proposals made by different groups and at least trying to think about why these proposals may be inadequate. But wherever you are in this country, I'd love to hear from you. The number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Sojourners, the Sojourner Community, Sojourners Magazine has, and that's a left-wing Christian organization. I say Christian, they claim Christian identity. I am often not in agreement with Sojourners. I'm not in agreement with them on this. They put out a statement on immigration. The title is Compassion, Not Criminalization, and Immigration Reform. Now, the first thing I would say, just reading that title, is you really can't have the one without the other. I mean, if you're not going to criminalize any wrongdoing in immigration, you're basically saying no one can do anything wrong. Just come on. But they're obviously suggesting here that these persons should be given amnesty. They offer a four-point plan. Let me read to you here. There's their four-point plan. And it's also offered by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops and World Relief, and this is what they say. Number one, we need a policy, a comprehensive immigration policy that addresses the root causes of migration. Now, what that means is we should share our national wealth so that there is not the disparity between rich countries and poor countries, so that people in poor countries would want to come here. Are you ready to bite on that one? Number two, we need a policy, they say, that provides a path to citizenship for undocumented workers. Well, that's real easy to say, isn't it? I mean, what kind of path? And what undocumented workers? Any and all? Amnesty on the basis of what? Third, they say they need a policy that establishes appropriate worker protections for both U.S. and foreign-born workers. Well, who wouldn't want that? But that's kind of like saying you want to have your cake and eat it, too. What does that mean? You want to protect everybody? And you want to protect all jobs? I don't understand that one. And fourth, they say they need a policy that removes the unnecessary and harmful legal obstacles that currently keep families separated across borders for decades. Well, is that just an open borders plan? The phone number, 877-893-8255. This is Albert Mohler.
Of the Albert Mohler Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I'm looking at the screen where Bishop Minerva Carcano of the United Methodist Church is speaking, she says, on behalf of all United Methodist bishops. And clearly a message is being well received by the massive crowd there on the Mall in Washington, D.C. How are these issues being received where you live? How are you thinking this through, not just as an American, but as an American Christian, as a Christian living in the United States of America? How do we think Christianly about this? You have situations such as the Cardinal Archbishop of Los Angeles, Cardinal Mahoney, suggesting that he will break the law. He'll defy the law in offering assistance to undocumented workers there in Los Angeles. You have others, Mayor Gavin Newsom of San Francisco, and here's a shocker. He has said that he will defy the authority of the United States government on immigration policy. So I guess now San Francisco, after he tried to have his own municipal marriage law, is now going to try to take immigration on its own as well. By the way, he doesn't have much to worry about because no normal American can live in San Francisco in terms of buying a house these days. I don't think you have to worry about too many people coming from other parts. Seriously, obviously there are a lot of normal Americans in San Francisco. I just mean the price of housing. I mean, it's one thing. It's kind of a luxury to be able to say in some places, we're gonna have our own policy, where in other places, it's very different. If you're down on the border along the southwest United States, if you're in South Florida, you know, I grew up in South Florida. I saw what happened with waves of Cuban and Haitian immigration, and I saw what I thought was an unfairness. You know, as a teenager, I can remember that the Cuban immigrants were allowed to come in. Again, that's a Cold War background because of political oppression. But the Haitians were often not allowed to come, and the Coast Guard process of interdiction and all the rest. Why? Well, because the poverty was considered to be an unworthy or unacceptable rationale for immigration and asylum, whereas political persecution was not. I don't know, as a Christian, how you make a real dividing line on a lot of the questions of justice here. I don't know how you say I'm going to privilege this justice claim over that one. And I can tell you that I cannot believe that an open borders policy is possible, sustainable for any country. I don't even think the people that keep calling for immigration reform along more liberal lines really mean open immigration. I think what they mean is immigration that that is open the way they want it to be open, not totally open to all. I don't know. I want to know what you think. 877-893-8255. How do we as Christians start to think about this? Let's go to Casey calling from Durham, North Carolina, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Casey.
Yes, Dr. Mohler. Thanks for taking my call. I want to say that I think Christians in America need to approach this issue of immigration and immigration reform by thinking of their true allegiance and citizenship. I think they need to put their Christian citizenship in the kingdom of God over their citizenship as Americans. And I think you appropriately called our attention to the scripture from Deuteronomy, which is reemphasized all over the place in the New Testament, that we are to care for widows, orphans, and foreigners. And oftentimes I think it's difficult for those of us who are exposed to so much wealth and advantage in the United States to imagine what sort of life many of these people are exposed to south of us. And you also mentioned the nation state and the changed geopolitical situation from the time of the writing of Scripture. I don't think that necessarily changes our response as followers of Christ. I think we're still called upon to be faithful in this way.
Okay, and Casey, I can't find anything to disagree with what you say there, but let me ask you, what immigration policy then would you propose? I mean, I think that's the hard question. I think the more we speak in generalities, the more we're going to agree, but when we actually have to propose some kind of policy reform, I think that's where it gets hard. Have you thought through that level?
Well, I thought it through a little, and I don't want to say up front that it's necessarily consistent, but this is what I think might be maybe a prudent approach, which is, first of all, I think everybody agrees that there needs to be a strengthened presence on the border, strengthen security, and do that in a peaceful way. Secondly, I don't think it's practical to take 11 million people and send them home when most of the time we can't even find where they're at now. I think just basically make the border security tighter, slowly weed out the criminals who are here in the population, and find some way for those who are here contributing to the common good to earn the ability to be here and to be a part of that citizenship with so many of us are advantaged with.
Casey, appreciate that. Very thoughtful call. Raised a whole lot of good issues. You know, there are some people, very responsible people, who are calling for building a wall along the American-Mexican border. And by the way, Saudi Arabia today just announced they're going to build a fence on their Iraqi border. So, I mean, such things have been done. All kinds of proposals. What's right? That's what we're talking about. 877-893-8255. I'm Albert Mohler.
This is the best of the Albert Mohler program.
Yeah, demonstrations still going on all over America. You know, I began by trying to think through some issues for us. Justice is very important, but how does one weigh justice? What is justice in terms of the welfare of American citizens? What is justice in terms of respect for law? What is justice in terms of people who've been waiting in line obeying the law versus those who crossed the border illegally and now demand citizenship? I think that's a big issue. What about justice? Why persons from country X and not country Y? These are big issues. And one of the things that that you note is that during the Reagan administration, there was a pretty significant amnesty, and it was supposed to be a reset. The promise was, we'll accept those who are here, we'll give them a pathway to citizenship, and then we'll close the border. Well, the border was never closed. As a matter of fact, the business of bringing undocumented workers over is larger now than ever before. The people who say they want to tighten the borders, well, you know, where's justice in that? In other words, when they, I just listened to one of the speakers, a demagogue here on this, this festival of whatever on the nation's capital in the mall, say, you know, we just need to, you know, Statue of Liberty needs to say, you know, you come rather than stay out. Well, who? I mean, no one can actually mean that they want all persons to come here, even all who might come or would come. Because that's an unworkable situation. So, you know, when people say they want a fair and just system of immigration laws and policies, well, I'm with them, of course. But what does that look like? And how do we construct it? Now, a little political reality here. I'll go back. I don't think we should reward people for doing wrong, for breaking the law. But I don't believe there is the political will in this country on the part of either party to deport 11 million undocumented workers. So I think the political reality is, one way or another, those persons are going to be here. And if they're going to be here, I'd rather they be citizens than not, accountable through the process of citizenship than not. But I do not feel good about that proposal. I'm not at peace with it. Because I'll just tell you, I think it again rewards people for law breaking. It more or less says, look, the way things are now, the status quo on the ground is going to determine what our immigration policy is. Well, what about tomorrow? That's the status quo today. What happens tomorrow? Justice is not easily answered. The demand of justice is not easily answered by a snapshot of today without reference to tomorrow as well. Let's go to Johnny calling from Lakeland, Florida, listening on WTBN. Johnny, your turn.
Yeah, hi. I just want to tell you that my point of view comes from more of a emotional one, because I'm hearing on the news about how, as far as our economy goes, how they benefit, like if they have it cross the border and have a child in our country, they benefit from Medicare and or Medicaid or whatever, and food stamps and stuff like that. Well, what's gotten me upset now is that I have a wife and two children, a one-year-old and a 10-year-old. We have no health care, and I work hard. I work 40 to 50 hours a week. And I heard Casey, your last caller, say about taking care of orphans and foreigners and stuff. Well, let's take care of our own first. Let's take care of me and my children before we take care of illegals. And it's getting me upset. I'm sorry, but they need to free up that tax dollars for us, not for them.
Well, Johnny, I understand the intensity of your call there, and I appreciate the fact that you called us. And I want to come back to the fact that we want to try to think about this, not just as Americans, but we also want to think about this as Christians as well. And I want to tell you, Johnny, what I think is lacking, and I hope you hear me on this. I want to tell you what I think is lacking in your analysis, and that is I hear the passion on your heart for your wife and your kids. And as a father and as a Christian, I honor that passion. And I honor your hard work. That says a whole lot about your determination to fulfill your God-given responsibility to provide for your family. And I hear in the intensity in your voice the fact that there's almost nothing you wouldn't do if you had to do it to protect them and to provide for them. You'd work more, you'd work harder, you'd do whatever. I think what's missing in your presentation of your position is an acknowledgement that many of the persons who are here precisely for the same reason. It is desperation. And if you are south of the border and your family is poor and impoverished and you look across the border and you see people doing well and you see America's the land of opportunity, it's pretty much like what happened in terms of the ways of immigration of the Irish and the Italians and the Germans and the Eastern Europeans and others at different points in America's history. And, you know, so I want to say I think we as Christians have to understand that most of these people aren't here because they think America is a great tourist destination, but because they see it as a way of improving their own family financial and provisional status, just to make sure they have food and health care and all the rest of these things. And I think we can't blame them for wanting those things. And having grown up, and by the way, Johnny, I was born right in Lakeland, Florida, where you are. And one of the big changes I noticed in Lakeland, and you, among very few people who will understand what I tell you, when I grew up in Medela my first years, and one of the things I know when I go back there is I see how Hispanic that area has become. And that surprises me. That's in Central Florida. And it's because of undocumented workers working in the agricultural businesses and other things there. And that's a big social change. And I don't know exactly how to manage all of this. I do think that on the left, there are some extremely irresponsible proposals being made. And when I listen to this kind of demagoguery here on the nation's mall there in the Capitol, it angers me, frankly, because I hear people playing to the crowd and suggesting that we can just have open immigration and everybody come and justice means that everybody gets to stay. I don't believe that. I don't think that's workable. And by the way, I don't think that's just. I think on the conservative side, we can sometimes sound very hard-hearted without recognizing that anyone who will put his life at risk to come to the United States of America is doing so because they see in this country the dream that brought our forefathers and foremothers here as well. Growing up in South Florida, I saw people come up on the beach from Haiti and from Cuba who put themselves in the most rickety and unseaworthy vessels, sometimes tying together inner tubes and whatever would float in order to leave a situation of utter desperation in order to come. How to handle this, I'm not sure. And I think that's the big issue. If this were an easy question to answer, I think we would have answered it by now. And it isn't easy. It's not getting a whole lot easier as the temperature gets ratcheted up with these public protests and media attention and all the rest. The Senate was very close to reaching a consensus. As a matter of fact, a bipartisan proposal appeared last week to be destined for passage, but it didn't pass. All kinds of things broke down at the end, partisan bickering and back and forth. I think nobody wanted to take responsibility for that bill, and now everybody's going to have to take responsibility for a system that's broken. How should we as Christians think about this? We can't reward lawbreaking, and we have to look at justice as something larger than the question of what to do with the people who are now here. But we do have to deal with the question of what to do with those who are now here. How do we handle this question? We'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program.
Well, we have obviously touched one of the national nerves today. We have more calls than we can possibly take. I want to thank you for calling, and we're going to try to take just a few here at the end to see how many we can get in. Let's go to Michelle calling from Vicksburg, Mississippi. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi. I just wanted to say that although I'm very sympathetic for people that want to come here to our country, I feel like that we have to come into the country legally. either we follow the law or we don't. And I feel like that as Americans sometimes we make everything a gray area. You know, it's not a gray area. You have to come in the country legally. And then we should make provisions for those who need to come and maybe reapply for being American citizens. But we can't overlook that these people came in the country illegally.
Yeah, I don't think I would contest the fact we can't overlook that. Michelle, let me just ask, so would you call for actually sending 11 million persons back? I just want to make sure I understand you.
No, I feel like that we should allow them to apply for citizenship, and that would also allow to weed out maybe the ones that are here that maybe have committed crimes. But I do feel like that we need to secure our borders, and we need to stop acting like we don't know that breaking the law is not good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you just put your finger on the great dilemma there, Michelle. What we all would kind of like to do right now, I think, is find a way to say, all right, this much and no more. And you have to earn citizenship, and by the way, the president's proposal called for that, but this much and no more. The problem is making the no more part stick. We haven't been good at that. We don't even have a mechanism for that. I would take seriously the proposals made by so many about how to handle the 11 million undocumented workers here if they would simultaneously agree on something like a fence or something like a policy. And a fence, by the way, doesn't say nobody comes across. The fence says we have control over this. And, Mexico itself has immigration rules and immigration policies, and some of them are quite restrictive, as a matter of fact. This isn't a one-way street. It just looks like that because most of the traffic is coming one way, and that's another part of the problem. Very quickly, we're going to go to Lee calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Lee. We're running out of time.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mueller. First, let me say, if anybody ever has an opportunity to go to a third world country, they need to go. They need to understand that it's about survival, and it would help them be more empathetic to the people that come here. Now, having said that, I've been through the immigration process legally and illegally with my wife, who is now an American citizen, by the way, but it took over 10 years to get her brothers here legally.
Yeah, I think that's a big point. Lee, I'm sorry to cut you short. We are literally running into the final seconds here, and I appreciate the point there. It is a long process. We all know it's broken. The question is how to make it better and how as Christians to think about it. We'll be back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.